Welcome to CFRI's Cystic Fibrosis Community Voices, a video podcast series created by and for the cystic fibrosis community.
Hello, everyone. I'm Siri Vaith, Executive Director of CFRI, Cystic Fibrosis Research Institute, and it is my pleasure to welcome you to this episode of CF Community Voices. We look forward to speaking with Ashley Balu Bonema about the benefits, emotional, mental, and physical, of singing for those with CF. Before we get started, I want to remind viewers that no information shared during this podcast should be used for one's medical diagnosis or treatment, and to please, before you make any changes to your medical regimen, to consult with your healthcare team. I also want to thank the sponsors of this podcast, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, Gilead Sciences, Genentech, Beatrice, and Chiesi USA for their support. We are most grateful. So let's begin. It is my honor to introduce Ashley Balu Bonema, who is a professional vocalist from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, the head of a private voice studio, and the founder and executive director of Breathe Bravely, a nonprofit organization dedicated to giving voice to cystic fibrosis. As an adult with CF, Ashley is a passionate advocate for our community, both nationally and globally. Ashley created Breathe Bravely's flagship program, SingSpire, a very innovative approach to contending with CF through the art of singing. We're thrilled to have Ashley with us for this two-part podcast. In this, part one, Ashley shares her very personal, very moving story of life with CF and how singing literally saved her life. Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you so much, Siri. This is just an incredible opportunity to not only speak with you, but also speak with our CF community and just share my story. I think we find more about ourselves the more we hear and listen and embrace other people's stories as well. So I hope people can find a connection with the words that I have to say as well. So I am a musician, which maybe seems a little ironic and illogical at times. For somebody with cystic fibrosis and currently 45% lung function to do professionally. But here I am. And I can tell you that it has been worth every labored breath, every moment that I thought I wanted to give up. And something so early within myself just told myself deep within that I had to sing. I wasn't always quite sure why, but it was something that I was always drawn to. And I think everybody can agree that music holds a specific place in their life. And whether we realize it or not, it can be truly life-giving. I have been married to my wonderful husband, who has been incredibly supportive through so many tumultuous times and so many celebrations. For 12 and a half years, he and I were both high school sweethearts. And I often say, you know, we met so young because we might not have the same time as most people do when they meet each other later in life. So we have two wonderful dogs. One is a 10-month-old golden doodle who is the life of the house right now, and also a tiny dinosaur. So I'm grateful beyond words to not only have this life that I get to live, but that I get to do it with somebody who has been with me every breath of the way, whether it's hard or whether it's devastating or whether it's the most simple of joys of us just being together and the true worth we both know that that carries. So I can't talk about where I am today in Breathe Bravely and SingSpire without going back to the very beginning of my story, not only as a musician, but also as an individual with cystic fibrosis. So I was diagnosed at a month old. I'm currently 34 years old, and I was diagnosed due to the late diagnosis of my older brother. He had gone for years suffering the effects of CF in the early 80s, had been tested once, came back negative, so he continued to go 6 years without an actual diagnosis of CF. And we know now that early intervention is everything when it comes to nutrition, when it comes to intervention of lung health. So he was diagnosed just before I was born. And so when I came along, they just tested me right away. And we both actually were positive for CF and F, because he was tested again later in life. So I can tell you it's a really humbling place to live, knowing that the reason that you have the life that you've always dreamed of today and that you get to take every beautiful breath that you do is because of the suffering of somebody else. It makes me emotional to think about it. My brother died at the age of 17 due to the effects of cystic fibrosis. And his life, his short life, played a huge impact on me and where I am and how I live my life and my childhood. You know, I like to think that I had a wonderful childhood. I don't know any different, but I can tell you that it maybe wasn't the most usual of childhoods. I didn't grow up, you know, on jungle gyms and going to the park and playing soccer and maybe things that an ordinary childhood reflects. My jungle gym was a hospital. It was the hallways. It was IV poles. It was the foosball table at the end of the hospital hall in which everybody could gather back in those days. Growing up, my brother was in the hospital more than he wasn't. You know, I remember growing up, he would maybe come home for 3 weeks out of an entire year, and that was interspersed. And most of the time that he did come home, he was on home IVs. And so that's just was my childhood was normal. My mom would get off of work. I would get home from school when I was old enough to go, and I'd hop in the car and we would drive, 35 to 40 minutes into the big city. And we would sit with him and see him, you know, till 9-10 o'clock at night. We would get back in the car, come back home, and we would do it all over again the next day and the next day and the next day. And honestly, that was just so normal to me. I can tell you after he died, I was in sixth grade, and just how strange it suddenly was to completely have a different life in a respect of not knowing the hospital every single day, not knowing that long drive from my little town of Larchwood, Iowa to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I often think about that when I go back and visit family, about that road and how many times we traveled it. When I was young, my parents divorced. And, you know, CF is a difficult diagnosis on families. It's an unrelenting, merciless disease that casts out a wake so much greater than just the person it's affected. And so, you know, it just wasn't my brother diagnosed with CF. It just wasn't me diagnosed with CF. And especially in the 80s, when there weren't a lot of treatments, there wasn't a lot known about this disease. And just having a chronically ill child and children can be really, really stressful on families and marriages. So I can see just how tormented CF is to, you know, an entire family system. And saw it only not just destroy the life of my brother, but I saw it also destroy the life of my parents and their marriage. I think that goes undetected quite often, and just how hard it is on a relationship as mother and son and father and son and sister and brother. And it was also really hard for me growing up in the sense of knowing that I had the same disease as my brother, but I was normal to a certain extent. You know, I took loads of pills to digest food, but I got to go to school every day and kind of blend in with the world. I looked pretty much like a normal kid, except for like the scrawny CF arms and the scrawny CF stick legs. But as a child, nobody saw me as different. And then I would pull myself out of that world where I seemed normal and everything kind of seemed carefree to visit a world in which reality was so heavy. And watching my brother literally die over the course of years, and in my mind, knowing that that would happen to me too, and how much pain it caused my parents, I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to cause those I loved, that pain, and to have them watch me suffer like that. My brother was extremely resilient, looking back on it and thinking of the life he lived, the family that he truly had when we weren't there. I mean, the doctor that we had, the nurses that we had, the pharmacist, the respiratory therapist, the people I still see today. And I can tell you, it's one of the greatest things. It's one reason that I hyphenated my name to Baloo Bonema, and just didn't get rid of my maiden name completely, is because that's who I've always been recognized with. And I knew if that time came in my life in which I would have to be in the hospital a lot, that became more of a home and a family to me than the life I really wanted, that people would recognize my last name, because so many people took care of my brother, and so many nurses and you know, even the cafeteria staff knew him. And it's still so great today when I have people contact me or I run into people and they're like, hey, you're Nate's little sister. I haven't said that out loud in a long time. It's something that still connects me to that life that just so drastically changed when he died. I honestly can't go a day without thinking about how grateful I am for the opportunity to live the life I have and hope to still. And I think that's why it's given me such great motivation and passion for the CF community, not only because, you know, we not only fight for ourselves, but we fight for each other. But knowing I've been granted this gift by just circumstance. And so it's my responsibility to use that to its fullest potential. So growing up, you know, going into the hospital, coming home, that was just our lifestyle. And again, I was pretty healthy. CF was kind of this mysterious thing that I didn't really feel afflicted me. There was, you know, hospital stays and hospital visits, you know, IVs and PICC lines and deteriorating lung function. But it always seemed outside of myself. It always seemed as if it was something I was running from. And whether that was denial, whether that was just a coping mechanism that I still use, you know, it can be a combination of all those things. But I first and foremost saw the destruction that it caused within our family, the pain that CF could cause. And so growing up, not a lot of people knew that I had CF, or they knew to the context of just, okay, she has this disease, but we don't see anything different from her. We don't see anything wrong with her. And it's something that I vehemently hid from most people to prove to myself, to prove to them that there was nothing different about me. So when I went to college, I studied music and French. And you know, in high school, I loved to sing. Music had been just a central part of my life. And even from a young age, those long hospital trips with my dad to go visit my brother when we didn't have a CF center close to us at all. You know, he would put on 80s music, and the entire 6-7 hour drive, we would listen to music, to 80s music specifically. So 80s music has a very, very deep love in my life. So, you know, we would listen to music constantly, and I would make up actions, and I could sing you every word to Jefferson Starship, We Built a City. I can do actions for you right now too. So I think right from that very start of my life, music was an escape. Music was something that allowed me not to be me. And, you know, while I was growing up, my dad would always video record, back in those days, for those who don't know what a VHS is, record videos of MTV. And back in those days, MTV was just music video after music video after music video. And that's what I would watch all day. Instead of cartoons, it was MTV music videos of the 80s and early 90s. So it's something that I just truly cherish, and I think has really was the foundation for my musical love, as maybe silly as that seems. And growing up as well, going in our basement, turning on, you know, the big old speakers from the 90s and inserting, you know, the CD into the player. And my brother and I would when he was home and felt well enough, would escape to our basements with like the early 90s track lighting and, you know, have lip sync contests and dance parties. And those are some of the most happy memories that I have with him, because it was the same thing. For those 10 minutes that we could do that together, CF didn't exist. CF allowed you to live without its grip. It allowed me to see Nate as my brother, as a child, as somebody who just wanted to live and have fun. And in that moment, it was just us, or, you know, us pretending as myself to be Celine Dion, or him Jock Jams, or whatever CD was up next. And it's still something that I do when I'm home alone during the day and my husband's at work and I have a 10-minute break or so between teaching, and I just am feeling overwhelmed and I'm feeling frustrated. Now I just, you know, say, tell Alexa to turn something on and fire up some music and just have a dance party and lip sync off by myself. And it's one of those things that connects me to my past, to my present, while still fueling a future that I believe in. So went to undergrad at a private liberal arts school called Augustana University here in Sioux Falls, and studied music and French. And just not even a handful of people at college knew that I had cystic fibrosis. And again, I was trying so vehemently to run from CF, to deny it. And I just kept thinking, if I worked harder, if I pushed harder, if I could mentally show CF that I was tougher, then there's no possible way that CF could make its presence known within my life. And for all of you, a part of the CF community, or have family that have CF, or children, or you yourself have CF, you know CF doesn't work that way. If we could all just mentally will CF away, we know none of us would probably have it. So the more I would push, the more I would, you know, pack on my plate to prove to myself that I was stronger, the more CF would undermine me. And I also didn't want my peers and my professors to know that I had CF, especially as a musician, because again, it seems illogical. It seems irresponsible. It seems impossible. And I wanted to be measured by the same standard as my peers as musicians, rather than, oh, Ashley's a good musician for somebody who has CF and can't breathe. And I wanted to prove not only to them that I was equal, but also to myself that I was equal. And so, you know, undergrad, I made it through okay. There were some bumpy times, but I persevered through it. It wasn't always easy. And looking back, there were probably some really dumb decisions that I made in this sense of maybe how far I pushed things. And I think back to, you know, what was it worth? What was worth hiding it from everybody? Would things have been different if I would have been open about my CF during that time? I don't know, maybe. Would I have been happier? I don't think necessarily. I would have worked maybe even harder to prove to them. It would have maybe driven me a little bit crazy as well, thinking or assuming that the only thing people saw when they would hear or see me is CF. And I never have wanted to be defined or conditioned by that perception, that I want people to see me as Ashley, who's a musician, who loves life, who loves people, who is compassionate, is empathetic, that tries her very best to reflect the goodness of the world that's been poured into her, and who also happens to have CF. I want CF to be the connector between myself and people, that it's just merely an obstacle called something different than what you might be going through. So I graduated undergrad. I remember doing a final recital that I had to do for my undergrad degree, and having this heaviness within myself this is gonna sound very dramatic when I say it, that when I got done singing, I thought, if I don't keep singing, I'm gonna die. And that sounds very dramatic, but it's something that I can still feel. And, you know, I'd constantly be asked, what are you going to do next? What are you going to do with this degree? Because I didn't get an education degree. I just merely got a performance degree. I did not want to teach in a high school or an elementary or middle school. Bless all of those teachers and how incredible they are and influential they are in people's lives. But that just wasn't what I felt was meant for me. And I would tell my professors and I would tell, you know, family and friends, I don't know. I just know I need to do this. And again, not a great answer if you're a parent helping pay for your child's tuition. So thanks, mom and dad. And I did wholeheartedly believe that. I still believe it. It's something I had to do. And I went out into the world for a few years, worked as a director of worship for a church, gathered some great life experience, you know, started a studio here with private students. And after a few years, I knew that I needed to go back to school. I knew deep within myself that my story wasn't finished in the realm of music. I also knew that CF was becoming more and more and more of my life's focus. And I felt like every single time I would look in the mirror, I would see CF behind me getting closer and closer and closer, and having that feeling within your chest that you can feel your pulse and your heart begins to race and you hear this ticking time bomb that time is running out. And I know we all with CF don't like to think about that, but I don't think we can help but think about that and wondering how much time we have. What can we do in that time? And can I outwill? Can I outrun? Am I stronger than CF? So I auditioned for some grad schools and ended up settling on a graduate school that actually I could commute from here instead of moving to a different city. And at that time, my husband and I had just previously bought a house and our family and friends were here. And we got ready to move to Kansas City, where I wanted to go to a conservatory down there for graduate school. And I couldn't do it. And I think part of me knew, if you only have this much time, how do you want to spend it? Do you want to spend it surrounded by the people that you love and you care about and your family and friends and everything that you've built here? Or do you want to start all over again? For what? And I had a wonderful friend down in Kansas City who is a professor down there that gave me some great advice, which again just rang true in my mind and allowed me to freely choose to go to school about 50 minutes away at the University of South Dakota here to get my master's. I commuted every single day from door to door. It was a 50-minute drive. I missed that drive a little bit just because it was a time to decompress. But it was the same type of thing when I went to college. My professor of voice knew that I had CF, but I didn't want anybody else to know. And CF being the unfair bearer of bad news made that impossible from day one. And I was forced to tell more and more people about my CF. I remember going in the very first week of school, I was on IVs and a professor of mine had brought me into her office and said, why aren't you auditioning for this opera? This is why we brought you here, right? This is our expectation. And, you know, I had kind of hem and hawed around the reasoning of why I wasn't auditioning. And at that time I was on continuous IVs. And I remember I lifted up my bag and that was, you know, in like a crossbody bag, and I pulled out my IV machine, my CAD pump, I guess is what it's called. And, you know, it sounds kind of like an old Walkman that kind of grinds. And I said, this is why I can't audition right now. And I had to explain to her about CF. I can tell you that I can still feel that kind of tortuous feeling about having to fess up to people and essentially tell them, in my mind, I'm not strong enough to do this, or you can't trust me, or I'm not accountable, which is, again, everything I wanted to avoid. It's the antithesis of who I want to be. And I did an audition, was on IVs for a long time. I had to tell my office mate, I was a graduate assistant down there, because he thought I was really in love with my purse, that I just would never take it off, that I was maybe hyper paranoid, that in a little town called Vermilion, South Dakota, somebody was gonna steal my purse. And so he finally asked about it, and I said no, and I had to tell him what was going on and about cystic fibrosis. You know, looking back, all of those moments in which I had to divulge my truth to somebody is something that was readying me for something bigger, no matter how hard that was. I'm grateful for those moments now, because I think if I weren't and I were resentful, I think that would have eaten me alive by now. There's a time in, I think, every person's life with any chronic illness that you have to, instead of running away, you have to turn and embrace. And I think you become not part of that chronic illness, but you find yourself, you allow yourself to see yourself for who you really are. And that's just a portion of it. It's not a defining portion. So I'm in graduate school. I'm thinking, you know, like I'm showing CF again. I'm doing it all. And I was teaching here, and I was doing how many credits down at graduate school. I was teaching in graduate school as well, plus, you know, doing some shows. And I remember I, for several years, had started dealing with severe hemoptysis. And if anybody in the CF community has dealt with hemoptysis, and especially some significant episodes, it's pretty terrifying. You know, I know it's pretty commonplace in the CF life, but blood should never come from that part of your body. And I think it's just a reminder of the lack of control we have over CF, over ourselves. And we know that it can come out of absolutely nowhere. And I remember it was the end of my first semester, and I felt pretty good. I just went up and we had to do a jury, they're called. So it's like an end of the semester performance for all of the faculty. And I went up, sang all my pieces, got done and was like, that's right, CF, take it. I just did that. You will never be stronger than me. And I went down to sit in the audience because I had some students that were going to sing, and I felt it. I exhaled, and you know that feeling. It's like this warm gurgle, this bubbliness. And I knew exactly what that was. And I stood up and I ran out of the auditorium that we were performing in, and I ran to the bathroom and probably had one of the worst hemoptysis episodes I've ever had. And it was in that bathroom that I was just too upset to cry, that I was furious, that I was thinking, why couldn't you just let me have this one moment? Why couldn't you just let me live my life? Let me do what I love. Why do you have to ruin everything? And it wasn't the idea of, you know, that this hemoptysis might not stop. It wasn't the idea that I would have to probably call an ambulance. It was the idea of telling all of those faculty members what had just happened. And how do you tell somebody that? So it, after about 20 minutes, everything stopped and it subsided. You know, you rinse out your mouth, you look to make sure there's no blood on your clothes, which is appropriate. I was wearing like an ivory dress that day. Of course I was. Clean yourself off, wash out your mouth, look yourself in the mirror, and it's like nothing ever happened. And I think we tend to forget that, not only about ourselves, but the world around us, that behind closed doors, life maybe look very different or what that person is going through. So I grabbed my bag, I walked out of the bathroom, and I was met with my professors. And they were like, where did you go? Like, what you were just gone. And so, you know, with like tears in my eyes, I had to tell them what had happened. And we know in the CF community how strong we are. And we're like, okay, I just had a huge hemoptysis episode. Let's go, let's move on, right? But when maybe somebody else hears that something like that has happened, you know, they were so good to me. They were so supportive. They were so caring. They're like, you're not coming back to school, you know, the rest of the week. It was just before Thanksgiving. And you're not coming back to school. Stay home. Be kind to yourself. Heal. And I remember that 50-minute drive home. I called my care team and told them what happened. I went and had an x-ray done, I believe, just to make sure that nothing was pooling, there was no issues. But just that semi-late drive home of going from being so elated and happy and proud to devastation. And I can tell you, I can feel the silence of that drive home. And how I knew the first time of walking back into that building was going to be tremendously hard to show everybody, because everybody's going to be worried and everybody's going to ask questions that I don't want to answer. And I just want to pretend that it never happened. But we all know it is impossible to do that. So everybody was really great. You know, during all of this time when I would be doing antibiotics constantly and I'd be doing IVs that would be months and months and months on end, and different cocktails that my body would no longer respond to. My close friends as well, you know, I'd be in the hospital for 2 weeks and I wouldn't want anybody to know. I would tell my husband, please don't tell anybody, because I didn't want their pity. I didn't want them to see me as sick. And, you know, your friends and family aren't dumb. They know when something's off, they know when something's not right. And so I had friends, you know, saying, please let us in. Please tell us what's going on. We want to be there for you. We want to be with you. Stop pushing us away. And it was in April of 2014, I woke up after having multiple discussions with colleagues and dear friends and family, just reiterating that same message of like, let us in, let us do this with you. We're gonna do it. So you can either let us do it beside you or at arm's length. So I woke up the day before April 1st and I sat down and I wrote my first blog, and it was called Breathe Bravely. And I look back at that entry now and think, oh my gosh, what was I doing? And it was a way for me to just kind of air my life to the world and open up to them about the realities of CF. And again, at the very end of every post that I would do, it wasn't about, oh, this is CF, feel bad for me. I wanted people to be able to connect with the humanization of it. That again, we all are struggling with something. We're all keeping something hidden. Life is hard. Mine happens to be called CF. But we all share the same feelings, emotions. We all feel joy the same way. We all feel sadness. It's just called something different, or it's inspired by something different. So later that year, I went through a pretty rough patch with CF. Again, it just being unrelenting, unforgiving. And I ended up incredibly sick. And I was transferred late in the fall into my second year of graduate school from the hospital here in Sioux Falls, which has a care center, to the University of Minnesota, because things were going so downhill so very quickly. That was a scary time. I think in our mind, those of us living with CF know kind of the long trajectory of what our life might look like. But when it begins to happen, it's so devastating, because your mind is hungry for life and it wants that normalcy. And it feels to an extent that you can have that normalcy. And I kept thinking, if I could just be stronger than CF, if I could just push a little harder, CF would forget about me. I could outrun CF. I could outlive CF. And again, all of us with CF in our life know that CF's like, you said what? I can take you down. So the harder I fought, the harder CF fought. And it was then, you know, having a transplant team come in and say like, hey, we need to have this conversation. We need to have it now. When I was up there, my lung function was down at around 25%. And just being so wholly devastated that I wasn't ready for this. I wasn't ready to make these hard decisions. And not only for myself, but I wasn't ready for my family, my friends to have to experience this. This is what I grew up trying so desperately to protect everybody from. And, you know, I can tell you it wasn't about myself. And having to go such a hard road that I commend so many people for being able to have the strength to do. It was also the possibility of not being able to sing and feeling, what am I going to do if I can never sing again? What am I going to do if my vocal folds are damaged, if I don't have the capacity to sing ever again? That's all I want to do. It makes me feel choked up thinking about that feeling of not doing that in which I felt gave me life. And thankfully, thanks to my care team, thanks to maybe some stubbornness and my friends and family, that is not where my path led at that time. So stubbornly enough, I went back to graduate school that next semester. Again, my professors and my colleagues at school, while I had to be away, were so supportive and so good to me. I'm not sure I would have gotten that anywhere else. And so compassionate and so inspiring, just as the human beings they were being towards me, the kindness that they were showing and the support. So I went back to graduate school. And at the end of everybody's graduate school career and getting a master's in music, specifically in performance, you have to give a graduate recital. That's your final thing. And for the first, you know, from January when I went back to April, mid-April at least, I couldn't sing. I didn't have a voice. I didn't have the lung capacity. It was painful. It was so hard. And it was through all of that, just fighting so diligently to do the thing that I felt gave me life, even if it was hard, that I did my final performance the beginning of May of 2015. And I know when I took the stage for that last time that evening to do my final bow, that walking out, I thought, oh my God, I did it. It's knowing in that moment, staring out at everybody, them also knowing what that moment truly meant, what we had all overcome together. It's when I truly realized that singing had saved my life, not only physically, but also mentally and emotionally. And I got done, it was a few weeks after graduation, and a dear friend of mine, I was in her kitchen, and she said, what are you going to do now? And I said, I think I want to start a nonprofit in which we teach others living with cystic fibrosis about the art of singing and how it can save their life. Whether or not it changes their physical capacity to breathe, gives them simple breath awareness, or it just gives them a better quality of life. So thank you all for being a part of my conversation and a part of my story about kind of how I got where I am today.